engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Hello, America. It's Eric Erickson here. The phone number, if you want to be on the Eric Erickson Show, 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be here, I'm happy to be. Okay, I you know, this just popped in my head. This is the problem. Unscripted radio here. You'd be amazed at the number of people who think that I have a script. But nonetheless, this came up last night. So I did this event with the audience, with listeners in Jacksonville, Florida last night. It came up in an interview I did this morning here at WOKV. It came up with listeners last night. Eric Erickson is my real name. It is not a stage name. I assure you, were it a stage name, I could come up with a more creative name than having the first name and the last name be the same name. But it always flabbergasts me the number of people come up and say, so what's your real name? Actually, my first name is Eric Dash Woods. That's my real name. Eric Woods is my first name. The only people who call me that are my parents, my sisters, and my wife when I'm in trouble with my wife. Everybody else, it's just Eric. You would be amazed, however, the number of people who cannot pronounce my last name. Oh, you think it's easy. Erickson. No, no. In Middle Georgia, with people who lack teeth, it is Erickson. And I don't know why. Eric Erickson. My wife did not believe me until we got married and she had to go to the DMV to change her name. Her middle name, she's named after Vivian Lee, L-E-I-G-H. And the woman at the DMV starts calling for Miss Erickson and finally came up to my wife and said, aren't you Miss Erickson? At which moment my wife realized I was telling the God's honest truth. People can't pronounce our last name if they lack teeth and live in Middle Georgia. And the woman looked at my wife and she says, ma'am, would you like to be your middle name to be Arnold Erickson? Or do you want to keep Lee Erickson? She went with Arnold. I don't know. I don't know. But Eric Erickson is my real name. And now we must move on to actual news. Scary news, no less. As on Friday, I'll be taking a Boeing 757 home from Orlando, Florida. This is a Boeing whistleblower testifying before the United States Senate.
Are these planes safe?
Right now, I would not. You know, it's like an earthquake. You know, the big earthquake is coming. But when that hits the building that, you know, you, let's say if you're talking of a building, have to be prepared to accommodate that type of a, let's say, shakeup. You know, it has to be built properly. Right now, from what I've seen, the airplanes are not being built per spec and per requirement.
So your testimony is the 787 line and the 777, the 777 line,
they are doing stuff that increases the risk factors. Okay, when you increase the risk factors, you know, it's not just one. You are doing stress concentrations, that those stress concentrations, like, you know, breaking a paper clip, you know, you do it once or twice, it doesn't break, but it breaks at some time. As the plane gets older, you know, all of these things that, you know, you took, you know, you said it's not a safety issue, it becomes a safety issue.
And the company's response to you was to threaten you?
Threaten you, sideline you, you know, transfer you.
You raised concerns about the 787, and so they transferred you to the 777, right?
Well, initially they just cut me off of all the meetings. Oh. They took my name out, and then so I was just doing nothing. I wasn't informed of what. Then they transferred me, and they do it pretty stealthy. Oh, we have a job over here. We want you to go over there. So they move you down there, and, you know, I come from, like, 40 years of engineering background. So when I see, and I've taken a lot of stress classes, even though I'm not a specialist on that, but when there's a problematic area that you see, you can recognize.
That is Sam Selifor. He is testifying before the United States Senate. Josh Hawley asking the questions about Boeing. I don't mean to pick on my friends at the Media Research Center who put up the clip because I love them. I love Brent Brozell, but the tweet is Boeing quality engineer testifies that their planes are not safe and the company threatened him when he raised this issue. The next sentence, DEI hiring could kill people. Y'all, this isn't about DEI. Please stop. I love you, MRC. I really do, but this isn't about DEI. I actually know the issue here. There have been books written on the issue ad nauseum. Boeing engineers have testified about the issue ad nauseum. It's not a DEI issue, but people on the right, just like people on the left scream racism about things. People on the right scream DEI about everything. It's not a DEI issue. And can I please just explain this one to you? It has nothing to do. This existed long before DEI was even a big thing. That frustrates me when we try to encapsulate everything into a little simple statement to explain it. So, oh, it's DEI. No, it has nothing to do with diversity, equity, inclusion. It has to do with bean counters. There's nothing wrong with saving money. The problem is Boeing merged with McDonnell Douglas. McDonnell Douglas started having problems because McDonnell Douglas started cutting corners to cut costs, which caused problems, and it led to the development after the DC-10, which was a marvelously successful and popular airplane. It led to the development of the MD-11. The MD-11 was the successor to the DC-10. The DC-10 did not have winglets. The MD-11 did. It was more efficient. It had three engines, one on the tail, two under the wings, but the MD-11 caused McDonnell Douglas all sorts of problems because McDonnell Douglas tried to do new engineering to save money and new cost savings. It rolled out. It was widely delayed. It actually didn't have the efficiencies or the range that it promised. Companies like Delta Airlines that had invested in it to upgrade its Lockheed 11 TriStars moved to the MD-11, which didn't work for them because it didn't get the range that was promised. McDonnell Douglas into a tailspin, and Boeing and McDonnell Douglas merged. And then the geniuses put in charge of Boeing the McDonnell Douglas people who had just screwed up McDonnell Douglas, who then began screwing up Boeing. And what did they do? To save money, they started cutting safety inspectors. And then they got into outsourcing safety inspections. So instead of having people at the assembly plants to do the safety inspections, they were sending stuff to India because it was cheaper to send stuff to India for cheap inspectors and then sending it back. And then they started selling off bits of the company and letting other companies manufacture parts of the plane so they could save on labor costs and using third parties and things like that. It was all about accounting and saving money. And they elevated accounting for shareholder value and devalued safety. They pushed safety inspectors away. They reduced the number of engineers. They brought in people who hadn't worked as long to be able to save on labor costs. And the chickens have come home to roost. They weren't firing and hiring based on diversity, equity, inclusion. They were firing and hiring based on cheap labor versus the longtime people who had stayed there. And when engineers started complaining about the safety standards degrading, Boeing started shifting those people around and ultimately laying those people off. This is not DEI. This is your standard company got greedy problem. That's what happened. You talk to any number of Boeing engineers around the country, and they'll tell you that's the problem. It's not, yes, is there a DEI problem at Boeing? I'm sure there is. At every major Fortune 500 company now, there is. But that's not causing the problem with the planes. What's causing the problem with the planes is they decided to reduce the number of safety inspectors. They decided to reduce the long experienced engineers by laying off the old guys and bringing in young guys without as much experience. And they lost institutional knowledge. And then they lost the safety checks to make sure the institutional knowledge had been retained. It was all about money. Stop blaming DEI for everything when it's not true. It becomes a short, sweet little nugget for you to understand. But your understanding leads you to untruth. It leads you down the path path of NPR. It leads you to the idiot girl from TPUSA who believes that Chick-fil-A and Big Pharma are in a conspiracy together to make you fat because you yourself have no volition and can't choose not to get in the Chick-fil-A line. You must eat Jesus's chicken sandwich or else you go to hell. So you do. When did our side become so short-sighted? I love Meteor. Y'all, I really do love MRC. They are great people. But y'all, it's a rhetorical nugget that's just not true to say this is a DEI issue. Talk to Boeing engineers. It's not a DEI issue. It's a cost-saving issue. They weren't sending inspectors to India to boost the diversity content. They were sending inspectors to India to save themselves money. At the end of the day, not everything's to blame on this thing that you hate. Sometimes it's to blame on the other thing you hate. Greed. Greed typically explains stuff. And incompetence, too. Charlie and I were talking about this phrase. I use it often. Never blame things on maliciousness when the answer is usually incompetence. It is always, almost always, incompetence that leads us down these paths. So, but that's nerve-wracking. I'm going to be flying on a Boeing plane in 2 days. No, it's a Delta 757, and Delta's got great safety inspectors themselves. And Delta's been flying older Boeing planes. In fact, it's not a coincidence that the airlines that have the newest Boeing fleets are the ones with the problems. Most, if not all, of Delta's newer planes are Airbus planes. And Airbus isn't a perfect company by any means, by the way. Airbus has its own problems, and I've always preferred Boeing to Airbus for a lot of reasons. Airbus planes are made by European committees, and Lord knows how inefficient that is. But they've been holding up a whole lot better than the Boeing planes lately, the new Boeing planes. But the older 757s and stuff like that, I wish they'd bring back the Lockheed TriStar. Still my favorite plane. I love the Lockheed TriStar. Had an incredible record. But you know the safest plane in the sky, the plane with one of the best safety records? The Boeing 777. It's a brilliant long-distance plane. It's a brilliant, brilliant plane. The Boeing 777 has a near flawless safety record. The Russian shot one down, and a Malaysian Airlines captain drove one into the Indian Ocean, but neither of those were Boeing's fault. It's a great, safe plane. I've been in a plane crash in a 747 one time. It was a great, safe plane. Protect us all. Everybody got out just fine. But there are problems now. A lot of those problems, they're not DEI problems. They're bean counter problems, trying to save money at the expense of safety. You know, putting a large chunk of metal into the atmosphere at high speed, that's a challenging task. And when you decide you got to save nickels and dimes on the rivets and the inspectors, it becomes even more dangerous. And y'all should see the look on Charlie's face right now as I look at him. I don't know what he's looking at on his computer, but whatever it is, it's got to be good, and I can't wait for commercial break. I so rarely do radio with someone in the room with me, and I got him in here today, and it's down here in Jacksonville. The look on his face is priceless. But, y'all, the Boeing stuff, it's not DEI. There are real problems. They are manageable, fixable problems, but Boeing's got its work cut out for it. And, no, I don't feel safe flying on brand-new Boeing planes right now because of the problems. Boeing has lost a lot of trust with a lot of people. It can get that trust back, but it's going to be very hard for it to get that back. It needs to start working on that. And maybe take some of these whistleblowers seriously.
You're listening to The Eric Erickson Show, the perfect blend of news, analysis, opinion, and cooking. Yeah, cooking. Want to be on the show? Come on, be on the show. Call Eric now at 877-973-7425.
Hello there. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425. Gary, let me see if I can get you in here. Welcome.
Hey, how's it going, Eric?
Great. What's going on?
Nothing. I was listening to your last segment there about Boeing and all that. And as someone who works in aircraft manufacturing, this is what's going on with aircraft is pretty much... It's across the board. It's everybody. It's not just Boeing. It's not just Northrop. It's pretty much everywhere. COVID really hit us hard, and they tried to save a lot of money in manufacturing. And unfortunately, quality is an overhead of most, or actually all aircraft manufacturing. And that's the only place you can cut money. You can't cut the hours it takes to build an airplane without investing a lot of money, and that we just didn't have the money to invest. But I'm telling you, you are 100% right. DEI has nothing to do with this. This is strictly cost savings to try to get through when we were losing, when companies were losing sales through COVID and all that, and maybe even before that. But
yeah,
that's
look,
what I've seen in the industry.
Well, and look, you're there, and I appreciate this, and I even before COVID, I will say Boeing, talking to Boeing engineers in particular, who a number of whom I've known over the years. They were raising these issues. In fact, a lot of the prominent Boeing whistleblowers were going back to 2015, 2016, where management did decide to start altering how they did their safety inspections. And again, it wasn't DEI. It really was about got to save money because costs are going up. We can't charge our customers. And also, this came at the same time, we got to remember, that the Fed stopped subsidizing Boeing as much through the Import-Export Bank, which they'd gotten relied upon.
And I've been in aviation my whole life, over 40 years now, and I can tell you that you can put all the DEI you want. Aviation maintenance is male-dominated, white male-dominated. It's about 95% male and 5% everybody else. That's who applies for these jobs. These are the people who go to the military to do these jobs. You can DEI all you want, but that's who you're going to have actually building this stuff.
Yeah.
All that DEI stuff would only affect a lot of the operation stuff like that. I'm telling you, there is no company out there that is going to select, you know, gender or race over skill for the most part to build an aircraft. There's just too much at stake.
Yeah, you're right.
That might make me sound horrible, but it's true.
No, that is, and I think that's something that's like, oh, it's DEIC. Yeah, they missed that you're not going to put. You're not going to put a French interpreter in charge of actually building the aircraft. You are going to put engineers there. You may actually fire or lay off the old guy for the young guy because his labor's cheaper.
Right.
But I just DEI becomes kind of this catch-all now on the right of let's blame this thing as the problem when that corporate greed is actually still a thing. But people on the right tend not to blame corporate greed because we tend to like the private market and the entrepreneurs and the arm's length transaction. But here it's all about saving money, and you make a good point on COVID. Now, 10 regional banks have had their credit downgraded. They're going to get profitable from the government, probably bailed out, probably sold to a too-big-to-fail major American bank. But what about you? What about your hard-earned assets? Swiss America wants to help you protect your hard-earned assets now, and they've got this report about the secret war on cash they've been sounding an alarm about. I don't know if y'all heard this. John Eastman, he has been debanked by two banks. They didn't like the transactions he was making, and they didn't like who he was. This secret war on cash, it is spreading daily, governments and corporations together. You can get their copy of the report for free, the secret war on cash, from Swiss America. All you do is call or text my name, Eric Erickson, to 800-289-2646. The All That War on Cash, spreading daily. Get the report completely for free to my listeners. All you do, mention Eric Erickson when you call or text 800-289-2646. That's 800-289-2646. You can call them or text them. Just say, Eric Erickson sent me. Or text Eric Erickson, 800-289-2646. Message and data rates may apply.
He's got the courage to tell you the truth, even when it isn't popular. You're listening to The Eric Erickson Show.
Breaking news, Matt Gaetz claiming that there are votes in the House of Representatives to pass funding for Ukraine and that it will happen. Breaking news happening now. All right. I gotta take some of your phone calls here. We've got people who are patiently waiting, but before I take any phone calls, this is very important to me. I discovered why my producer had his jaw was dropped and he had these bugged out eyes and was just this incredulous look on his face across from me here in the studio in Jacksonville, where I never have anybody in the studio with me. So it's kind of unusual too. And his facial expression was just like wild. And well, it turns out it has everything to do with a cannibal. And Uncle Bosie. Uncle Bosie may have been eaten by a cannibal. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, I don't either, but Joe Biden seems to.
They called him Uncle Bosie. He was shot down. He was an Army Air Corps before there was an Air Force. He flew single-engine planes, reconnaissance flights over New Guinea. He had volunteered because someone couldn't make it. He got shot down in an area where there were a lot of cannibals in New Guinea at the time. They never recovered his body, but the government went back when I went down there, and they checked and found some parts of the plane and the like.
Uncle Bosie, Joe Biden's Uncle Bosie, was shot down in World War II and may have been eaten by corn pop, or cannibals. Corn pop may have eaten him too, but it could have been the corn. It could have been the cannibals. The cannibals could have popped him like corn and munched on. I don't know. But Uncle Bosie is dead, y'all. Then they found, the government found his plane for Joe Biden. Years later, they found Uncle Bosie's plane. But you know what they did not find? Bones. They never found Uncle Bosie's bones. He could be somewhere with Elvis, working at a Burger King in Kalamazoo, Michigan, hiding from Joe Biden, feeling the effects of Bidenomics. Possible. Or it could have been cannibal poop. Now, we will take your phone calls. 877-973-7425. Mark, you're next. Welcome.
Yes, sir. I was listening to your story about DEI not being at all part of the problem with the manufacturing quality and maintenance quality, and I don't completely agree with that. I think it's part of the problem. I think it's a cumulative problem, money saving and everything together. I've also worked for the airline for 35 years and aviation for 48 years. And I've seen the push for lean manufacturing all over the industry. And with the lean manufacturing, they part of the agenda is to reduce inventory, to reduce costs. They reduce inventory that might work okay for a manufacturing place, but for a maintenance place, it doesn't work at all.
Yeah, look, I think that's true, but I don't think, Mark, that's DEI. Now, on the airline side of things, undoubtedly you're seeing DEI at the airlines. Absolutely, in the airline industry. But on the manufacturing side of it, I think it absolutely is to cut costs. It's not a DEI thing, and this does go back well before DEI was a thing. If you talk to the Boeing engineers and the maintenance facility and the plant workers and stuff, this was all about, after the merger with McDonnell Douglas and the financial impact of that, that Boeing needed to save money. It wasn't, they could face save and say, well, we're hiring women and non-white people, but it was actually for cheap labor, as opposed to the old white guys who had been there for so long making salaries that they could hide behind it. But it was all about saving money. Yeah, absolutely, though. You are right. The airlines, though, different from the manufacturers, the airlines, yeah, you see DEI there a lot at the airlines. I mean, my gosh, watch the videos, the startup videos on the airplanes now. They've got to have every race, every gender. I mean, you got the Z's, the Zers, the Hims, the Hers, everybody in the videos trying to represent everybody equally. Walk down the jetway onto the plane. You're going to see the posters of the same-sex couple, the heterosexual couple, the couple where you don't know which one's the woman and which one's the man, and the alien couples, the illegal immigrants, the tattooed people. You're going to see it all when you walk. They want to represent everybody. The marketing people, they are all into, we must make everyone feel welcome. I'm kind of, you know what, I think when I walk down the jetway to get on my flight, the thing that offends me is that they don't treat the furries as real people. They don't have any furries. We can't really be inclusive of people's proclivities unless we have some furries represented in the in-flight pictures as well. I mean, you can have the same-sex couple and the transgender couple and the couple where you're not sure who's the man and who's the woman, but unless you have somebody in a rabbit costume kissing the person in the dog costume, sitting there in first class, drinking their drinks, there's no real diversity there. Shame on them. Justin, you're going to be up next. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, sir. Thank you. Sorry, I'm still kind of laughing at what you just said about the ferry.
Sorry, didn't mean to throw you off.
Well, the image in my, I couldn't help it. I was thinking about my question, and then as soon as you said it, I thought about being on the plane looking ahead and being like, what in the hell is going on?
The Eric Erickson show, where at the end of the day, you need brain bleach.
I love it. So I had a question. I had a conversation with the phone screener, and we Googled it, and the answer that we kept getting was very cyclical. So exactly who is the Electoral College? How do they get there? How do they maintain their positions? How do they get replaced? Are these mysterious people who choose our president every 4 years?
I know the answer because I used to play a role in picking members of the Electoral College. So here's the way the Electoral College works in every state. You have your Republican Party and your Democratic Party. Your Republican Party and Democratic Party, they have state conventions. In election years at the state conventions, the Democrats and the Republicans both nominate people within the party who they want to serve on the Electoral College. The way it works is you take a state's number of House of Representatives and add two for the Senate. So in Georgia, for example, we have 14 seats in the House of Representatives plus two senators. So that means Georgia gets 16 members of the Electoral College. So the Republicans and the Democrats have their state conventions, and they decide, each of them, who they want in the Electoral College. They both submit their slate of Electoral College members to the Secretary of State. When the popular vote is conducted on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, whoever wins the popular vote in that state determines whose party slate of electors will make up the Electoral College. The Secretary of State then certifies that slate as the Electoral College and convenes them in the state capitol building of their respective state on December 18th or 19th, I think 18th of the election year. They certify the names. Those people are the Electoral College. They each cast a vote. They sign their name by who they voted. It's certified by the Secretary of State, and it's forwarded on to the United States House of Representatives for certification on January 3rd of the following year.
All right, so, that is my question. That's much more helpful than Google. Thank you very much.
Why, thank you. I'm like Vision Computers. 15 seconds or less, you get your answer. Thanks, Justin. Yep, you call Vision Computers at 404 Compute for your tech questions. You call Eric Erickson at 877-973-7425 for your constitutional questions, and I can provide you the answer. I used to do this. So when I was a lawyer, and I did election law, I had to do this in to the 2004 slate of electors in the state of Georgia. That was one of the things that I had to help with. So each party, the way it typically works in states is you have a county convention for the Republicans and the Democrats, and you have someone from each precinct. You have people from each precinct. They get together. They have their precinct meetings. They nominate people to go to their county meeting. So you go to the county meeting. In the county meeting, you nominate the people who goes to the congressional district meeting. And those people go to the congressional district meeting. In the congressional district, you nominate who goes to the state meeting. And then you get to the state meeting, and then they decide someone from each congressional district to be in the Electoral College, plus two statewide people to represent the Senate count. In Georgia, for at least it's 16, 14 House, 2 Senate. They give the names to the Secretary of State. The Democrats do the same. Whoever wins popular vote, those people get certified. They become the Electoral College. They cast their votes. They sign their names. It goes to Congress under the seal of the Secretary of State of the state, and then Congress opens those on January 3rd or the first Monday after January 3rd, if it's on a Saturday or Sunday, and they have the Electoral College vote. That's the way it works. Now, all right, let's move on, because Joe, probably I'm seeing what he wants to talk about. He has perhaps the most useful information of any caller to the show today, where I will learn something from Joe. Welcome, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing great, Eric. I'm shocked that I'm 3 for 3 in calling in and getting through after 30 years of never being able to get through to Rush. Three for three.
Okay. And now, wait. I want to explain this for you because until I guest hosted for Rush, I had made it through one time in my entire life and Snerdly hung up on me because he didn't think I had a useful point. But there's always the busy signal when you call Rush, and I'm trying to get to that point, but here's the problem. With Rush Limbaugh, he had three lines. So you got millions of people calling, and he's only got three lines. For some reason, I can't get them to reduce my number of lines. I got nine lines of phone calls. It's easy to get through. Doesn't make me sound exclusive. I want the exclusivity, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking my call, and I know that you love food almost as much as I do, and you're going to Orlando.
Are you calling me fat? I mean, I am, but...
Orlando has two fantastic places to eat that are both... It's Chicago food, which, of course, is the greatest in the world, in my opinion. But Portillo's is a place you got to go to.
Oh, I love Portillo's.
They have phenomenal hot dogs, and they have Italian beef sandwiches that are to die for.
Uh-huh.
And, of course... Giordano's deep dish pizza, phenomenal. They have them in Orlando.
Okay, so, all right, Joe Kim, we need to pause for a moment and just recognize that I'm going to Orlando, Florida, and you're calling to recommend two Chicago restaurants that have franchises in Orlando.
That's right.
Don't eat local, Erickson. Eat Chicago.
Right. That's right. It's calling from Peachtree City, Georgia, to recommend Chicago food places in Orlando.
So you're in Peachtree City calling to recommend Chicago restaurants. Okay.
Exactly.
Now, you happen to recommend two of my favorite Chicago restaurants, those in Clancy's, the steakhouse in Chicago. I eat it. Whenever I go to Chicago, I try to make all three of them because you're not wrong, and I did not know that they had a Portillo's or a Giordano's in Orlando, and now I may have to go. Instead of finding some mom-and-pop greasy spoon that's been in Orlando 50 years, screw them, we're going to go to a Chicago restaurant in Orlando.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I gained 3 pounds just thinking about it while we've been on the phone.
Yeah, okay, so now, okay, for all of you, seriously, Joe's onto something. The Portillo's, the Italian beef sandwiches. By the way, have you seen The Bear, Joe, the TV show on Hulu?
Oh, gosh, have I? I'm like addicted to it.
It's so good, and it's about a restaurant that was serving the Italian beef sandwich. They're so good. The Portillo's ones are so good.
And the second season's even better than the first.
Yeah. All right. I could talk all day about Chicago food with you, Joe. I'm going to let you go there. But yeah, those are good. I feel bad going to Orlando, being recommended by a guy in Peachtree City, Georgia. I should have asked him if he had a golf cart and worked for Delta, but I didn't. Recommending Chicago restaurants in Orlando. But, I mean, it's Disney World, too, let's be honest. I mean, I can go to France in Orlando and eat. You know, for years when I was a kid, my Uncle Leif, I was hoping to see him, and I'm not going to be able to. He lives in Winter Park. Leif Erickson lives in Winter Park, my Uncle Leif. And I got my day for the next 3 days or so programmed out. I don't have family time, downtime for it. But when I was a kid, my Uncle Leif, we were Swedish, and like you can't like the Norwegians. Those Norwegians are bad people, and I wanted to go to Epcot, and they had something, I can't remember what it was now, and it was in Norway. And I remember being so upset that I couldn't go to this thing at Disney World because it was in Norway, and my Uncle Leif would never speak to me again if I went. And I didn't go. Now I can't remember what it was, but that was my upbringing. Who cares about racial issues? Those sneaky Norwegians, you can't trust them. That's what I grew up with my Scandinavian heritage. Now we should move on to other things before I get in trouble. Let me tell you about Americans for Prosperity. Speaking of Bidenomics, in all seriousness, they built the Bidenomics.com website. Now, this is another example of why might Trump win? Biden's got incumbency. He's got money. It's the little things that tell you that the Biden team's not firing at all cylinders. They wrap Joe Biden around the term Bidenomics, and they don't go by Bidenomics.com. It's kind of a no-brainer to go do something like that. When you become known by this term, you begin to repeat, including in your State of the Union. And they didn't do it. American for Prosperity beat them to it. They bought Bidenomics.com, and they set up this website to give you all of the facts about Joe Biden's economy, how bad it is, how it actually relates to you as a person. And essentially what they do on this website, go to Bidenomics.com. You can see for yourself, here's Joe Biden's quote, and here's the truth. Here's the quote. Here's the truth. They make it very easy to share all this stuff with your friends. It's a very great website. It is Bidenomics.com. It is brought to you by the folks at Americans for Prosperity, and that they did this and that the Biden team is a warning sign. The Biden team's not firing on all cylinders, but that Americans for Prosperity is.
He'll do the research and give it to you straight. Eric Erickson is live every weekday. Join Eric's army of activists. Text ARMY to 33777 now.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's breaking news I have to bring you here. It is Eric Erickson across the nation, and this actually is a pretty big bombshell. It has just dropped at Politico. They have confirmed it. The Chinese embassy in Washington, D.C. has been inviting congressional staffers to briefings on the Chinese embassy's grounds on why Congress should not force ByteDance to separate from TikTok. We've been told all along that this is not a Chinese app. We've been told all along that ByteDance is not entangled with the Chinese in the United States. But this breaking news, pretty big news happening now. Politico has confirmed the Chinese government at its embassy has been lobbying Congress behind closed doors on TikTok. This is from Haley Fuchs at Politico. Quote, the Chinese embassy has held meetings with congressional staff to lobby against the legislation that would force a sale of TikTok, according to two Capitol Hill staffers. Diplomats from the Chinese embassy met with Hill offices to push talking points defending the staff. TikTok said in a statement the embassy meetings were, quote, news to us, and it's absurd to ask us to comment on anonymous sources we know nothing about. Since the bill's introduction, we've been publicly vocal about why we oppose the ban bill, says Alec Horick, a TikTok spokesperson. This so-called reporting doesn't pass the smell test, and it's irresponsible for Politico to print it. In a separate phone call to set up a meeting, an embassy official said that the Chinese ambassador was interested in discussing, among other matters, the House's TikTok bill, according to a third staffer, a Democratic Senate aide who was approached. Michael Sobolik, senior fellow in Indo-Pacific Studies at the American Foreign Policy Council, argued the revelations of the embassy's lobbying campaign underscored the need to separate TikTok from its Chinese parent. Amen. By the way, Michael Sobolik has a great new book out about the Chinese situation, Countering China's Great Game. This is breaking news from Politico. TikTok says it does not merit news reporting because it's anonymous sources, one of whom is a Democratic Senate staffer whose name Politico is not giving, saying the Chinese ambassador to the United States has been scheduling private meetings at the Chinese embassy to try to scuttle the forced sale of TikTok from ByteDance. Tells you everything you need to know about why TikTok is a bad idea and why it should be shut down if we allow China to maintain control of that app, because it is a spy app.